This talk is based on the work that I have done with Michael Grasser, who is a postdoc in Santa Cruz now, Chris Kolda, who is now in Berkeley. This person doesn't need any advertisement, and no one knows anyway where she is. So, and John Turning, who is now at Harvard. So, first I will try to tell you what the relation between these large extra dimensions, the Randall-Sundrum model, and the hierarchy problem is. This will be sort of a general introduction. Then I will review the important features for us of the Randall-Sundrum model. Then I will tell you what was known before about the cosmology of these theories and what the source of big confusions in this field is. And then I will hope I will be able to resolve these confusions and tell you that basically radio stabilization is one of the things that has been left out from all of these previous considerations, and that will basically get you back to the usual Friedman equation. So I will give you in this an effective theory picture, an explicit five-dimensional solution, and show how big the corrections you expect are and what the physical consequences are. So what is the conventional approach to particle physics that has been pursued until the last few years? So we heard from David Gross's talk the story of the standard model, how nice it is, and we also heard how much emphasis has been put at the beginning on the fact that the standard model is a renormalizable theory, like this is what Tuft got his Nobel Prize for, and that the fact that it is valid at all scales. So in principle, this could be the fundamental theory of everything because it's renormalizable. But of course, I don't think anyone in this room believes that this is the case. And what everyone now believes that the standard model is a very good effective theory that describes physics valid below energy scales of order a TeV or approximately a TeV. And one of the main reasons for this belief that it's not the fundamental theory of everything is in the way one has to reconcile ultimately particle physics and gravity. So what is the problem that arises? We sort of heard this yesterday from Pranath a little bit. So the standard model has an elementary Higgs scalar whose mass should be of the order of 100 GeV to a TeV, depends on the actual models. And we know that in the standard model there are quadratically divergent corrections to the masses of the Higgs scalar. Now, what I should emphasize is that if the standard model was the fundamental theory of everything, then this would not be a problem, because then we could just use dimensional regularization, and in dimensional regularization there are no quadratic divergences. So this is only a problem if we believe that this theory is only an effective theory valid up to a given cutoff of the order of lambda. But we know, of course, that this cannot be the fundamental theory of everything because there is gravity. So there is an additional scale in the theory appearing, namely M Planck. So the best one could hope is that the standard model is valid up to M Planck. However, then this issue of quadratic divergences appears, and then what one would get is that the theory that the Higgs scalar gets corrections of the order of M Planck squared, which is clearly a fine-tuning problem, and this is the hierarchy problem that everyone knows so well. So basically, to rephrase it, the hierarchy problem is, why are the scales of particle physics and gravity so very different from each other? And, of course, the usual route to resolve the hierarchy problem was that we said that, well, the standard model is really not valid up to M Planck, but at the scale of the Higgs mass or around the scale of the Higgs mass, there must be some kind of new physics appearing which will cure this problem. And the two usual routes of resolving this was one of them is supersymmetry, which says that above 1 TeV, really these loops cancel each other, there is supersymmetry. Or the other possibility was that above 1 TeV there is really no fundamental scalar in the theory, but these are only some effective states valid below a TeV, so that's the other route. So basically, the program was to say, okay, so we have to change particle physics at the order of the TeV scale to accommodate this big hierarchy between particle physics and gravity. And the new understanding in the last 2 or 3 years was that there is another way of resolving this problem, and this is that instead of trying to change particle physics at the order, at the scales of order of TeV, one should try to change maybe gravity or maybe both. So there is a partial list of people who are responsible for these ideas. And so then the question is, if we are trying to follow this route, how should we change gravity? So of course, because this idea of having extra dimensions is around for, I don't know, 70, 80 years now. And everyone knew that it's possible to have extra dimensions if these are compact. And of course, the natural size of these extra dimensions would be set by the scale of 1 over m Planck. So for a long time it was assumed that this is basically the only consistent scenario. And this assumption comes basically from the fact that in the effective four-dimensional theory, of course, all the particles would have Kaluza-Klein modes, and these have masses of the order of 1 over the compactification size. So at least this compactification size in the usual scenario must be bigger than of the order of TeV, because Kaluza-Klein modes of electrons have not been observed. So this was up till 2 years ago, and the new ingredient that made real progress possible comes from the understanding that there is one other possibility, is that it's possible that the standard model fields actually don't propagate in the extra dimensions, but they are confined to a three-dimensional wall, what we paraphrase as brains, and only gravity propagates in the extra dimensions. So Arkanyham and Dimopoulos and Valli realized that one can reinterpret the usual Kaluza-Klein reduction formula, and instead of requiring that the size of the extra dimension is of the order of 1 over m Planck, it is possible that our observed m Planck is only an effective scale valid below the size of the extra below getting close to the fundamental scale, and above that the extra dimensions will open up and we would really see the fundamental scale of the theory. So their idea was that if you take the fundamental scale of the theory to be order of 1 TeV, then there would be no more hierarchy, because the scale of particle physics and gravity would be the same. Sure. Oh, sure, of course. Yeah, I agree. But certain type of matter you cannot put in the bulk if the sizes of the extra dimensions are too big. That's all I was trying to emphasize. So, however, so then from this KK formula you can calculate what in their scenario the size of the extra dimensions should be, and they found that one extra dimension is impossible, because then the size of the extra dimensions would be really huge, 10 to the 13 centimeter, but already 2 is not excluded by gravitational measurements. So the possibility of the existence of this huge extra dimensions is very exciting. However, they don't really solve the hierarchy problem. And of course, the reason for this is that the natural size of the extra dimension, as I explained to you, should be 1 over m fundamental, the fundamental scale of gravity. So what this scenario does is it really translates the hierarchy problem, into the question of why the radius of the extra dimensions is so much bigger than its fundamental, than its natural scale would be. Like in the case of two extra dimensions, the hierarchy between this and the actual radius that you would need is exactly the same as the hierarchy between M Planck and M Weak. Of course, if one can find a dynamical reason for this, then it would be okay. For example, there was this paper last week by Cohen and Kaplan, in which they are claiming that in the case of a cosmic string, they can actually get an exponentially larger size of extra dimension. And so maybe if you find a dynamical reason for having this radius of the extra dimension to be big, then it would solve the hierarchy problem. But just saying that you have large extra dimensions does not. So nevertheless, as I said, just the possibility of the existence is very intriguing. And there has been lots of work done on trying to understand the phenomenology of these theories. And especially interesting, I think, is the cosmology of these models, because, I mean, this is really a fundamentally new ingredient for trying to understand cosmology of these theories. So, for example, I would point out the work by Arkani Hamed et al., that they claim that, for example, the radion, the size of the extra dimension, could itself be the inflaton. And, I mean, it's a long story, but it's very interesting new possibilities. So, as I said, the large extra dimensions itself do not solve the hierarchy problem. And the new ingredient by Randall and Sundrum was that they said that we can also consider non-flat backgrounds, which are actually caused due to the presence of Brain and Bar cosmological constants. And as I will try to explain to you, this actually might solve the hierarchy problem due to this non-flat curved background. So, in the second part, I will review what the important features of the Randall-Sundrum model are. So, in this case, we are considering one extra dimension. And so this is the case that would be, for example, already excluded in the large extra dimension scenario. And we have two brains. And for simplicity, the extra dimension is assumed to be an S1 mod Z2 orbifold, which basically tells you that every function should be symmetric under the interchange y goes to minus y along the extra coordinate. So it should be reflection symmetric along these brains. And one of these brains has a positive tension, the other has a negative tension, and there is a bar cosmological constant. I'm sorry? Does it contain? No. So that means it's what? It's an orbifold plane? That's what it means? Okay. Oriented fault plane. That's right. So you're saying that one of them has to be an oriented fault plane. That's right. Yes. Yeah. Exactly. So the question is, what is the solution to Einstein's equations in the presence of this background cosmological constant? And so they were looking for the solution in terms of an ansatz like this, where you assume that there is basically a static solution. So this was an ansatz where they assume that nothing depends on time, but everything depends only everything depends only on where you are exactly along the extra dimension, but you preserve four-dimensional Lorentz invariants. And so if you write down the Einstein equations, you get two independent components for this ansatz. One of them comes from the 0,0 component, and the II components are exactly the same because of Lorentz invariance. And so what you find here is that if you want to have, so this is an exponential solution, then this parameter m is related to your bulk cosmological constant in this way. So you see from this already that the bulk cosmological constant has to be negative in order for such a solution to exist. And then once you have this solution everywhere, then you have to make sure that the jumps, that the equation is also satisfied at the position of the brains. And this... B and B not are the same. So in order to reproduce these delta function sources, the derivative of A with respect to the extra dimension has to have a jump in order to have a delta function reproduced by A double prime in the Einstein equations. And from this, you can find that M is also related to the brain tensions. And this is, of course, different on whether or not you are on the positive tension or on the negative tension brain. But this is the, if you assume minus V equals of the brain tension on the negative tension brain, then this is the one equation that you get. So these two equations that I wrote down imply that there must be a fine-tuning between the cosmological constant in the bulk and the brain tensions, and also the two brain tensions have to be related to each other by an extra minus sign. And then in this case, we have a static, flat, effective four-dimensional universe. And you can recognize this solution as just being a slice of anti-de Sitter space glued together at these brains. And it's done such that exactly this jump in the gluing is accommodated by the brain cosmological constants. That's right, yes. So it is a flat, exactly, that's a moduli. So now if you are trying to calculate what the effective Planck scale in this theory is, you are expanding basically your background around the four-dimensional flat background, and you find a relation like this, where basically kappa squared is one over m cubed, where m is the fundamental scale of gravity. So it's basically m fundamental cube over this parameter m0 that is basically given by how big your cosmological constants are. And then there is this very slight dependence on the size of the extra dimensions in the effective Planck scale. So now, how does this solve the hierarchy problem? For this, one has to look at what the natural mass scale on the negative tension brain would be. So what one has to do is, one has to, of course, look at what the induced metric is on the negative tension brain. And you see that there is an exponential factor appearing in this induced metric. So if you are trying to write down a Lagrangian for this negative tension brain, then there will be extra exponential factors floating around that when you want to normalize your field canonically to get a canonical kinetic term, then these will give you additional suppression factors in the mass term. So basically they were arguing, Randall and Sundrum were arguing, that every mass on the negative tension brain is suppressed by this extra factor of e to the minus m0 b0. And so if your fundamental scale of the theory is m Planck, then there will be a suppressed natural mass scale appearing on the negative tension brain. And this will be basically the scale of particle physics if we live in this on this negative tension brain. So another, they also pointed out that an even simpler way of understanding this case is that you see what really is invariant in this picture is the ratio of mass scales. So from the point of view of the negative tension brain, you see that also the scale of gravity is 1 TeV. So you could start from an observer living on the negative tension brain and say that the fundamental scale of gravity is 1 TeV. But then, of course, you get an exponentially growing solution if you go away from the brain. And if you are trying to calculate what the effective Planck scale in this theory is, you will get that there is, of course, an extra positive exponential factor appearing. So basically, from the point of view of the people living on the negative tension brain, this could be a theory, like in Niemann's case, where you have fundamental scale of gravity to be order 1 TeV. However, the formula, the relation between the fundamental scale of gravity and the effective Planck scale is very different than in their case. You get this naturally big exponential factor, and that's what would give you the relation between the fundamental scale of gravity and the four-dimensional effective Planck scale. So, as I said, this also shows that really the better way of thinking is that the fundamental scale of gravity is of the order of a TeV, and above that one would expect strong gravity effects. So just very briefly, this won't be very important for us, but I just want to tell you that they were also analyzing the spectrum of the Kaluza-Klein modes by expanding the Einstein equation around this background that they found, and they get a Schrödinger equation for the Kaluza-Klein modes. And what they find is there is one bound state of gravitons that is localized closely to the positive tension brain, the Kaluza-Klein modes, which then will reproduce the usual four-dimensional gravity, even if this negative tension brain is moved very far away. And these Kaluza-Klein modes have masses of order TeV, but their couplings is not 1 over M Planck like in the large extra dimension case, but 1 over TeV. So this is basically the model, and now I would like to focus on what the issues in cosmology are and what has been done until now. So there are two distinctive questions in this about the cosmology of models like this. One is, does the late cosmology, the cosmology of now or after or at very low energies like nucleosynthesis and after, reproduce the usual expansion of the universe from an effective four-dimensional point of view? And this is sort of a requirement. If this is not true, then this model is not a viable solution. And the other is trying to find models for early cosmology, like inflation, radion stabilization, etc. Of course, this part is more exciting, but one first needs to make sure that the late cosmology is okay, that we really have the correct expansion equations. So in this talk, I will only focus on the first part, the late cosmology. And so I will tell you what has been done about the cosmology of brain models in general, and what the confusion that has been caused partly by us, I have to confess to that, and how this confusion is resolved. So Pinetrou, Desailly, and Langlois considered the cosmology of these brain models when you, in addition to the background cosmological constants, whether or not you have it, you introduce some matter. And you are trying to see how this extra matter is expanding your universe. So they were writing down the Einstein equations for a five-dimensional theory with brains, actually exactly this S1 mod Z2 type model motivated by Horava and Witten. And actually this work came out one day before the original Raman syndrome thing, so they could not have had application to that in their minds. So So in their case, they are looking for a solution to Einstein equation. But now, of course, because we want the brains to expand, they also have to have time dependence. However, they are assuming that the extra dimension is not static. So this assumption you should keep in mind. This will be very important later. So they are assuming that the extra dimension is not expanding. And however, they do not include any source for this to be true.
To what extent is the Tauber situation understood when actually has the dimensions done in?
So that's what I will try to speak about. Yes. Exactly. That will be the main point of this talk. So they are including source terms on the two walls. I will call the wall at zero, which will be in the Randall-Sundrum scenario, our hidden wall, the wall with the positive tension, as rho star. So there is some kind of matter included here. And there is some kind of matter included on our brains. And what we would like to see is that we get the right expansion equations in terms of this matter included on our brain. I'm sorry? No, that's just because of the usual Minkowski. Yeah, that's...
But that stress energy is above that of the brain tension itself.
Well, it could be included. Could be... Yeah, it could. You could just write that their equations will be valid if you just write that rho full equals a cosmological constant plus. So you could... So... They were writing down the Einstein equations for this ansatz, and you see that you have to include, like you said, in addition to. So now here, really, this is in addition. This is meant to be in addition. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, this is the bulk. This is the bulk contribution, and here this is the full contribution from the brain. So, what is important is that you get the usual conservation energy just from the Bianchi identities on both brains. And the other important thing is that you have these delta function singularities on the right-hand side. And again, just like I was saying in the Randall-Sundrum solution, the second derivatives in A and N have to reproduce these delta function sources on the right-hand side. What you need to do is, so you can very easily identify how big the jumps in the derivatives of these functions A and N are, just by saying that there's this one place where second derivative appears. So basically, this has to give you the right-hand side. There are these two places where second derivatives appear in this equation. This has to give you the pressure on the right-hand side. So after doing this, they get what we call these jump equations. Let's just tell you that the jump of this function at the brain has to be given basically by the source that you include at the brain. And the jump on N has to be given by a combination of P and rho. However, by using these jump equations and using the 5-5 component of the Einstein equation averaged on the brain, so basically you go from the two directions and see what the average value is at the brain, you can derive one equation very easily. And this sort of played a crucial role in the future development, because this looks like it's very similar to the usual Friedman equations that one would expect for a four-dimensional expansion. For example, there's one, I wrote down one of these equations. However, you can see usually it is linear in rho. However, what they find is if there is no bulk cosmological constant, that it is actually quadratic in rho. And they were concluding that these brain models generically are very problematic in general, and they usually do not reproduce the usual Friedman type equations, because h squared is proportional to rho squared instead of rho. And and they were also looking at how this would affect nucleosynthesis, and they said it's very hard to accommodate it. Now, the question is, what is the reason for getting this unconventional equation? And they were arguing, yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. That's right. That's what. Exactly. So that's what I will explain, how you will in the end recover it and why they don't recover it. So basically the question is, what is the reason for this unconventional equation that they are obtaining? The reason is that because you are in a compact space, there is a constraint on the matter that you can put on the two brains. And they were arguing that this is sort of a topological constraint, like when you put electric charge on a compact manifold, the sum of the charges must cancel. So this is at the heart of this wrong cosmology. And to see explicitly how they get it, how they get this constraint between the matter and the two brains, is they actually found the solution everywhere in the bulk as well for the case of no background cosmological constants. And you can just read off what basically the point is, that just by concentrating on one brain you will find the solution everywhere, and then you can just continue it to the other brain and look what the jump is at the other wall, and you can find that there is a relationship between the matters. And what I should emphasize is that Sandeep Singh could go wrong if there is no real good effective theory description. If everything varies widely in the extra dimensions, then you don't expect the average to reproduce the correct equation. But what I should emphasize is that the reason for the wrong cosmology is not that. It's not that you have a very big dependence on where you are in the extra dimensions, but basically this constraint. And the question is, okay, so let me go further in what has been done later. So one possible resolution that was suggested, actually it was partly done by us, that this, you get this rho squared term, but instead you want something linear in rho. And if there was a large background cosmological constant and a large background brain tension, then of course the leading piece would be just rho times v if there is a cancellation between the zeroth order terms of the cosmological constants. And this is actually exactly what happens in the Randall-Sundrum scenario. So what we did is we took their Friedman-type equation and just plugged in this, and we found that the equation, the Friedman evolution equation, so this was the Friedman equation that they found, Friedman-type equation they found, and we expand around the Randall-Sundrum solution, and we find that actually for the case of living on the positive tension brain, we immediately recovered the correct equations. However, for the case when we live on the negative tension brain, we get a wrong sign, because as you see, the leading piece comes from the cross term between rho and v, and so there must be a sign difference between the two cases. And so the
Well, actually, recently there was a paper by this collaboration in Japan that said basically gravity is the wrong sign.
So there were all kinds of weird papers after this, and some people claim that there is leakage of the brain into extra dimension, but I think this is really just, as I will explain, just the effect of not taking the dynamical radian into account correctly.
It wasn't clear that paper was inspired by it, although it was.
Oh yeah, it was inspired by this.
It was inspired.
Yeah, so basically all they did is, if I understood correctly, they got a covariant derivation of the same problem, if I understood it correctly. Basically, instead of going to this to this particular ansatz, they used this Gauss-Kodachi equations and obtained that there is a sign problem. Yes.
I'm a little confused about something. So if you start off, if you have your two brains,
yes.
You start off allowing sort of independent mass densities on the two brains.
Yes.
But then you say you find a constraint, then if you start with some extra mass density here, the other one there.
Yes, I will explain what the reason for this is. Okay. That will be the main part of the...
Right, but I mean, it's not... I mean, you said it was sort of analogous to having zero charge in a closed
universe. Well, that's what they claimed. I don't think that's the reason.
In ordinary closed Friedman models, for example, you have plenty of matter, no negatives.
Exactly.
So there's no obvious constraint on the total matter.
That's right. Yes, I think it's not the right explanation for...
Because you're trying to make it compact and impose the
heat
symmetry, right?
It's... Okay, I will explain... Okay. So, yes.
So, typically you might worry that, you know, Einstein's equation is a nonlinear equation. You can't put delta functions wherever you want.
Yes.
Only special cases where delta functions.
So that will be the point, okay? So why don't I tell you what happened? Okay. Yes.
I don't think you're going to talk about that.
Okay. Which one?
It's the same with expansion because if you do not, I don't put it.
Okay.
If you have two brains and just left space between them, then the bottom line is that you get the wrong margin.
That's what they were also claiming. Yes.
But what you're going to resolve here has nothing to do with that.
Oh, it will also resolve that problem.
So the cosmology there is also fine.
That's also fine, yes. So again, to illustrate this problem of the constraints, what we were doing is we couldn't find the solution to Einstein's equations in the Randall-Sundrum solution when you put this rho and rho star on the two walls. But we were able to find an approximate solution. And what we find is, again, just the same way as before in this flat background, that basically just looking at the positive tension brain already determined what your solution has to be everywhere. And then the jumps at the other brain already told you what the matter on the other brain has to be. So we find a constraint like this. And this explains basically that why you have the wrong sign, because you have to put a negative matter on the negative tension brain in order to get in order to be consistent with the expansion equations. So what is really the origin of this constraint that confuses everyone, or confused us too? When I came here, I didn't know what the reason for this constraint is. So let's calculate what the effective four-dimensional action is by using a very generic ansatz. And what we find is, this is the important point, that putting in matter on the two brains generates an effective potential for the distance between the two brains. So basically, however, we were assuming that B is something constant in all these solutions. So this tells you that because there is a potential between these two brains, there should be one equation of motion. This extra dimension does not want to stay constant. However, we were requiring that this extra dimension itself is constant by our ansatz. So that's the point. So when you calculate what the equation of motion with respect to B0 is, usually it would want B0 goes to infinity. However, there is another solution in which you just fine-tune the matter such that you exactly, if you fine-tune the matter such that there is a stable minimum. So basically, that's the most important part of this talk, to understand that the reason for finding these non-conventional cosmologies was that we assumed that there is a stable extra dimension without actually stabilizing it. And then that required that there is a peculiar relation between the matter on one brain and on the other brain. Otherwise, these brains would fly apart, and that would be the right solution to the Einstein equations. So we really think it's not like in the case of charges put on an extra dimension, because all that happens is that if you put on the wrong matter densities that do not obey this equation, all that happens is that the extra dimension itself would want to expand.
Is it obvious to expand rather than contract?
Or contract. It depends on... Yeah, but it would not stay static.
What's omega c?
Omega c is the warp factor. Is e to the... Omega c equals e to the minus... beta 0 m 0 over 2. Yes. So this is the warp factor. The first power of the thing that appears.
Are you saying that there is the omega here, they divide the
either reach each other or blow apart. If you don't... So what I'm saying is that clearly, I mean, without these problems of cosmology, you have to somehow anyway stabilize the radius of the extra dimension, because otherwise, you know, your Newton's constant depends on this extra dimension. If that is changing, then everything is wrong. So.
But your stress tensor is only non-zero on the brain and has no phi component.
That's right. Yes, for the matter. No, we don't assume it's traceless, because that would mean it's radiation. I mean, it's just radiation.
Yeah, you could take the limit where you just have one brain.
Yes. So that part was fine, because there, you see, there is no radion, that's not a dynamical field. And you automatically got from this analysis that the Friedmann equation was the conventional Friedmann equation.
Okay,
so that scenario was fine. That was known to be fine for a long time. And the question was, what happens to the other case when you really want to put on matter, arbitrary matter, on the two walls? So what I want to stress again is that the non-conventional cosmology is again not the consequence of the failure of an effective field theory. But, as I say, the resolution could just have been that there is no good effective theory, because everything varies widely in the bulk, and an average description is not a good description for our brain, where we are really interested in quantities just on our brain. But the consequence of this non-conventional cosmology is a consequence of the fact that there is an extra light field in the theory that we really don't want, which is the radion. And so the assumption is that if the radion is stabilized, these problems should all go away. So again, if someone asks, why do I need to stabilize it if I already assume B equals B0? Because this was really our confusion for a long time. We already assumed that B equals B is something static. Why do I need to stabilize it? Because without stabilization, there will be this constraint on the matter that you can put in, which will go away completely if you stabilize the extra dimension. So what we were doing is we added some stabilization potential to the effective action, and then if you look at now the B0 equation, it will no longer be a constraint, but it will just tell you how the radion is shifted away from its own minimum a little bit. And, of course, as a function of the Hubble constant. And then what you get for the expansion equation will just be, like Sandeep said, the ordinary four-dimensional Friedmann equation with both matter on the hidden wall and matter on our wall included. And this is the Friedmann equation that one does expect, and rho star and p star are not constrained in this equation. And you should also note that what appears here is exactly the right thing, because rho times omega to the 4 is the physical density. This rho was the bare density that's included, and rho times omega to the 4 is the physical density that appears in this equation. So this is just like one would expect. And then we also checked it by a detailed solution of the Einstein equations, of the five-dimensional Einstein equations. And as an analogy of this whole confusion, I would like to show you some really low-level model in which you have two spheres which have both electric and charges, and of course they also attract to each other gravitationally. And if they are not connected by any force, then the only way they can stay fixed is if there is some fine-tuning relation between the charges and the masses of these two spheres. However, so this equation of motion, this force equation, will tell you that there is this constraint. However, if you stabilize the distance, so you put in some spring between them, this equation of motion in that direction will only tell you that B wants to say that it's minimum, or in the limit when you take the radian to be very heavy, like when you have a fixed rod, then this equation of motion you can just completely throw away, because it just tells you that this rod can exert any kind of force you want. So basically what I want to argue from this is that what you have to do is you have to throw away the 5-5 component of the Einstein equations and solve only the remaining components. And in order to simplify, in order to actually find the real solution, we were doing it in the case of cosmological constant perturbations instead of matter. Yes?
Sorry. The 5-5 component was the one which sort of gave you the minimum of the potential.
That's right.
So why are you throwing that away?
Because I'm assuming at the moment that the mass of the... I'm in the limit when the mass of the radian is infinitely heavy. So just in the limit when the mass is... of the radian is very, very heavy, then that equation doesn't give you any other information except that, so you have a potential of the sort B minus B0 squared. It only tells you that B equals B0. That's all it tells you when M, R goes to...
So the mass is a function of the other parameters in the method, right? It's not an independent parameter.
No. Exactly, and I will show you a mechanism that does it. So, well, that's yes. So what you really have to do is, which we didn't do, is you have to go to this mechanism that stabilizes the potential and include all the scalar fields and then solve Einstein's equations and the equations of motion to the scalar fields. That, I agree, we haven't done. It's not really Einstein's equations, I agree. Yes? I don't want to say anything about inflation at the moment. We really didn't think about it. But are you asking about the radian problem? About the... But in their case, the problem, the real problem there is that they need to have very light radians.
Yeah.
And here the radians won't be of... They have radians of the order of 10 to the minus 3 electron volt or something. But here the radians will just be PV or... You mean the fact that you don't want to shift the... Well, I think I will discuss this in this case, and I will tell you that at least for densities below a TeV, there won't be much of a shift in Newton's constant. So, Yes.
In the spirit of fine-tuning, if that mass was an infinite but of the order of the DVD,
yes.
Is that still good enough?
Yes, I will tell you that. Yes. So, all I wanted to stress you here that from the five-dimensional point of view, with adding this extra potential in by hand to the equations, which I agree is not, well, one would need to check by going through the real equations of motion, including the scalar fields, that you actually can find the solution now to the Einstein equations. And the point is here that now you threw away the 5-5 equations of motion, because all that told you is that B is at its minimum, and then you can solve for what the Hubble constant that you expect is, and it is exactly again of the same order as I was expecting from the effective four-dimensional point of view. So, as I said, if the radius is stabilized, the cosmology will be conventional, and Goldberger and Weiss showed one possible mechanism for stabilizing the distance between the two brains, and what they were assuming is that there is one scalar field that lives in the bulk but couples to both walls, such that on one wall the expectation value wants to be different, this they put in by hand, than on the other wall. So so basically their mechanism is such that at the two walls the scalar field has to have different values. So this means that basically the kinetic terms want to make B big so that there will be small change. However, they also included a mass term by hand, so that would want the distance to be small between the two walls, and that will give you an effective four-dimensional potential for this distance between the two brains and stabilize it. I don't know. I don't think so. That's the only stabilization mechanism that I know of. So, how big are the corrections due to the shift in the radius when you have finite size, finite mass radians? This actually we did yesterday, so no warranty is implied. So basically, in the effective four-dimensional action, I include a potential for the radian, and then I calculate what, in terms of the physical mass of the radian, this coefficient should be, and I find. So I take this potential to be of this form, and I find that basically A is of the order of m radian squared times a TeV squared. And we have also just checked that in this Goldberger-Weiss stabilization mechanism, the natural size of the radian mass is of the order of a TeV, and not as small as in this case of large extra dimensions, where they in some cases they really need to have it this small. Well, it comes from the fact that all your parameters in the theory are again included to be of the order of M Planck, like this M phi, the mass of this phi field is of the order VH, VV. However, there are these omega factors, these exponential factors appearing, and exactly, it's, yes. And the other important thing is that, so basically what we find is that the shift in the radius for a natural size, the radian mass is of the order of the physical rho that we include on the walls divided by mr squared TeV squared. So basically below a TeV size physical perturbations on the two walls, this shift will be tiny. So this seems to be okay.
By the way, in the question that I raised, what the not even an assumption, that we take the exponent.
That's right.
R times T, by the way.
That's right. So, but the idea was.
Let it give you one.
Yes, but the idea in this Goldberger-Weiss mechanism was that they were actually saying that there was this, that you can choose these parameters such that with not much, I think they needed only a hierarchy of 5 or 6 between these V's and M's and you know the fundamental, and they were getting the correct factors. So it's kind of small, but not exactly, but not very small. So, oh, and one more thing that I should emphasize about the radion is also that its coupling is not like in the usual extra large dimension case, but it's also suppressed only by 1 over a TV. So that basically comes in this previous formula where I was showing you the shift in the minimum of the radion field. The usual expression would be here, 1 over mR squared, m Planck squared in the large extra dimension case, but here it's only a TV squared. However, this means that we cannot have as small radial masses as they have in the case of large extra dimensions. Okay, so one important consequence is, as we saw, that we do get the expected conventional equations. However, we do get the contribution from the hidden wall as well. And that is, and the natural mass scale of that would be of the order of m Planck and of our scale. So it means that if there is any matter on the hidden wall, that would completely dominate the expansion of our universe. So this could be sort of, as you know, some people might say that, well, this is just back to the hierarchy problem. Why is this rho star so much smaller than rho? But one could probably find some mechanism why this hidden wall should not have any matter on it. So we didn't really think much of it. But once it's suppressed, of course, it's a good candidate for dark matter. But I didn't. That's right. Yeah. But probably this is simpler to solve because all you want is there is no matter on the extra brain. So I think, I hope I convinced you that this cosmology should be conventional. And now that we understand this, we would like to focus on how inflation works and how the more exciting stuff will work in the Randall-Sundrum model. So to summarize what I was telling you, it's very important to understand that there is a new approach to reconcile particle physics with gravity. And this is to change the behavior of gravity above the scales of order of TV. And as I explained, the cosmology of these brain models was thought to be unconventional, but this is basically not due to the failure of an effective theory description, but because we required by hand that the distance between the two brains is static, without actually forcing any mechanism. And then, of course, by adding any type of matter, these brains would either want to fly apart or get together. And once the radius is stabilized, the cosmology of this theory should be conventional, with small corrections expected if the temperatures are below a TeV. The constraint disappears, and there is no anti-gravity problem and no leakage of the brain, etc. And as I said, the expansion is, however, dominated by the hidden matter, and that needs to be suppressed somehow. And of course, there's lots more to do in the early cosmology of these models. Thanks. Yes?
So you said you know something about the solution off the brain as well?
You mean in which scenario, without or with stabilization? I have a solution. I have an approximate solution, not an effective, just an expansion in rho. So when I neglect all higher powers of rho.
Well, my question is, So if you take your solution on the brain, the fact yes. that it reproduces ordinary cosmology means that there's a big bang. So there's initial singularity if you go back to the final system in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, if you go off the brain a little bit, is there a singularity in the five-dimensional metric? Or is this some singularity on the brain arising from some sort of very weird embedding? Is it the embedding that's becoming singular, or is it the five-dimensional?
I think it's the five-dimensional. There's nothing special happening when you go. But as I said, this is again an expansion in rho, so I don't really know the exact solution. So maybe it's premature to judge it, because this is only valid up to temperatures of, you know.
It's only for small rho.
Exactly. So I shouldn't judge this question, because I don't know the absolute exact solution. Yes?
Yeah, but the scenario where the two brains are moving apart from each other, mm-hmm.
Well, that would mean that the, you know, your Newton's constant is changing. So I'm assuming that.
But how much wrong with that as long as you fix the experiment?
I'm sorry?
There is some possible variation.
Probably there is some little variation, but I'm assuming in this case, you know, over long times, it would have moved the pack. I mean, I didn't check it, but.
If it hasn't moved so much, there's no way, no reason to.
Probably, yes. Yes. But the hierarchy would, you know,
oh, yeah, sure.
The hierarchy would change a lot. On the Planck brain, yes. So if there is matter on the Planck brain, then. Yeah, then it's okay. Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. One needs to understand why there is no. I completely agree. Yeah, exactly. Exactly, yes. Yes?
What about, well, I guess it was a discussion of matter in the ball, so you certainly have gravity, gravitons in the ball pool. Why wouldn't they be up to the earth? Are they all sometimes decoupled?
Well, as I said, I mean, they should have masses of the order of a TeV, so I don't know what happens above temperatures of a TeV, but. Below it, they are okay. Yeah, exactly.
I think after that scale, it's probably decompacting part.